Season 1 of Collaborative Psychiatry Quick Takes wrapped up a couple of weeks ago, but I don't want the learning to stop there. So today I'm sharing a short excerpt from our full audio course, Managing Depression in Primary Care. This clip focuses on one of the most practical questions we face in clinic, how to choose a first-line antidepressant, and how to set expectations so patients actually stay on it for long enough to see benefit. If you've been enjoying the Quick Takes, this will give you a feel for how the full audio courses go deeper with structured frameworks, algorithms, and the kind of language you can use with your patients tomorrow. Here's the excerpt. Okay, so I want to turn now to talking about initial antidepressant selection. When we're talking about medications here, I'm really focusing in on managing depressive symptoms. So a lot of these medications can be helpful for managing anxiety as well. But I want to focus more on that in the anxiety modules, in the management and pharmacology sections, and really focus on the depressive symptoms here. And to be upfront too, I'm talking here about my general approach to prescribing, right? So this is not a consensus approach. I don't think a consensus approach even really exists. There's no hard evidence for doing it this way versus some other way. But this is what works for me and what I think is easiest to do out of the primary care setting with all the other time constraints that are out there. As a quick little sidebar, the evidence doesn't actually show that it's better to start with any one antidepressant than another, but it tends to show that escitalopram, sertraline, and citalopram are the least likely to be discontinued because of side effects. So you can take that into account. So again, my personal thought process here, first-line antidepressants are bupropion, escitalopram, and sertraline. Bupropion is a great antidepressant. It also has a good side effect profile. So it tends to be activating, doesn't cause sedation or weight gain, and it doesn't tend to have sexual side effects, which are more commonly associated with serotonin activity than the SSRIs. And those pairs of side effects, right? So weight gain, sedation, sexual side effects are the ones that are most frustrating for patients and most often lead to discontinuation. The only caveat with Wellbutrin is that it can be activating, right? So for certain patients, that can cause a surge of anxiety symptoms. So if somebody's coming into the office with depression and anxiety symptoms, that's when I'll usually go with escitalopram or sertraline. Whereas if they're really purely presenting with a depressive picture, I'll go with bupropion 9 times out of 10 because I think it works better and has fewer side effects. Now, escitalopram and sertraline are the top of my SSRI list because they're common, relatively lower side effect profile, and they have fewer medication interactions than some of the other ones. The other two I'll include here are vilazodone and vortioxetine. Again, these are slightly newer medications. They're not yet fully in the mainstream, but I like them because they don't tend to be associated with those sexual side effects or weight gains that, as we just said, are the most frustrating ones to patients. The other thing that can be helpful sometimes with initial antidepressant selection is any comorbidities that may be coming up with the individual's depression. All right, so if somebody has a lot of insomnia, weight loss, or appetite changes, mirtazapine can be a good option in that situation. This is why we tend to prescribe it more with geriatric depression. Similarly, if somebody has a comorbid pain disorder, the SNRIs like Cymbalta or venlafaxine can be a little bit more helpful here because they can also help with the pain symptoms, especially for neuropathic pain. And then finally, if somebody has a comorbid nicotine use disorder or they're a smoker and they're trying to cut down, bupropion is a good option there because it has that indication as well. So just to wrap things up and round things out, I want to touch on the other antidepressant medications as well. Just because they're out there, you may see them prescribed or you may want to use them at some point yourself. So fluoxetine or Prozac is one of them. This tends to be a more activating SSRI medication, not have as much sedation as some of the other ones. It also has a longer half-life, and that can be helpful if somebody's not great with adherence. They may be taking the medication more intermittently, but they'll still get effect because of that long half-life. The catch is it's a little bit more dirty in terms of side effects and medication interactions, which is why I tend to go with escitalopram or sertraline first line. The other one is citalopram, right? This is a solid antidepressant. Like we said earlier, people tend to stay on it longer, like escitalopram or sertraline. so it's a little bit better tolerated. But it does have some QTC prolonging effects at higher doses, which is why I tend to prefer the other two, escitalopram and sertraline, over citalopram as a first-line medication. So I can push the dose if I need to for people with, especially with more anxiety. Then finally, we have paroxetine or Paxil. I almost never prescribe this medication, typically don't recommend that anybody else does either. It tends to be very dirty in terms of side effects like sedation and weight gain. And even worse than that, it has a very short half-life, so people can be at risk of SSRI withdrawal after even missing a single dose of paroxetine. Now, when thinking generally about these medications, the problem that we have is that one individual may respond to one medication and not another, one class of medications and not another, or one dose of a medication and not another. And we don't have any blood test or other way of predicting who is going to respond best to which medication. Now, you may have seen some of these commercial pharmacogenetic tests coming up recently. These are tests to look at the CYP liver metabolism of various psychotropics. The issue here is that most of the studies that have been done have not shown that these tests really change outcomes in the management of depression. The theoretical hope, right, is that if we understand how the individual is going to metabolize certain medications, it'll help us adjust our dosing and with any kind of side effect prediction that we can do to help manage our treatment. But again, most of these commercial tests are not FDA approved, and the studies that have been done on them have not shown significant improvements in depressive scores or symptoms, and so they're not something that I'll use in a routine case of depression. Now, one thing that's slightly related that can help with initial selection is asking the individual if they have any biologic relatives who've had a good response to certain medications. That tends to be correlated with a good response in the individual at hand. So that could be a useful piece of history to collect. Broadly speaking, though, I'm going to talk about these issues with patients before starting medications. And this is really just expectation setting, right? We know these medications work, but we don't know which one is going to work for you. And for any medication that we do try, we want to do a real trial, which is typically around 6 weeks or so on a good dose of the medication. But we may still have to change our approach if it's not working at that point. And the other thing that I think it's helpful to be aware of is that some people have a pretty significant placebo effect to starting a new antidepressant. So they may feel better quickly after beginning the medication, but that placebo effect could wear off before the actual pharmacologic mechanism starts to kick in at 4 to 6 weeks. So I'll typically tell people that some individuals have a good quick response to this medication. They can fade away before building back up around that 4 to 6 week mark. So that's just a little bit of anticipatory guidance for those who may stop the medication in case the placebo effect wears off. This was a short excerpt from Managing Depression in Primary Care, one of the full-length audio courses available on the Collaborative Psychiatry site. The complete course walks through diagnosis, screening, first-line medications, switching and augmentation strategies, treatment-resistant depression, neuromodulation options like ECT and TMS, ketamine, and practical ways to talk about depression with patients, all structured specifically for outpatient clinicians. In the next few weeks, I'll also be releasing a new course called ADHD Pharmacology, a Practical Prescribing Framework, followed shortly after by Managing Alcohol Use Disorder, both built around the same practical, primary care-friendly approach. All audio courses are included for full access CME members or available individually for purchase on the site if you prefer to go one course at a time. And if you've been listening to the Quick Takes, don't forget to check out the downloadable PDF clinic resources that go along with many of the episodes. Those handouts are designed to help keep the learning fresh, something you can pull up in clinic when you need it. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you over on the site for the full course.